Hi guys, welcome back to another episode of Dwarfism History. My name is Aubrey Smalls, and if you're joining me on YouTube for the first time, this podcast is now a video podcast. I think it would be cooler if you guys could see some of the stuff I was talking about, see some of the images and the photographs that we have of these little people. So I figured, why not, you know, throw a couple lights up in my room. And anyways, I'm basically Wendy Williams now. I got my note cards. I got my Bev. Anyways, today we're going to be talking about the history of little people. Taylor Swift has been on a tour called the Eras Tour, where she's visited different eras of her career. Today, we're going to be visiting different eras of dwarfism history. I really tried with that joke, and I just don't think it worked. So let's start in ancient Egypt, which is, in my opinion, the best time in history to have been a little person. Listen, I would have been worshipped. Literally, I would have been worshipped. Because they thought, in ancient Egypt, that people with dwarfism were like divine, sacred beings. Not only did they have multiple gods, including Bes, who was the protector of sexuality, childbirth, women, and children. Not men, though. Pitaigos was also another popular god in ancient Egypt. He was commonly referred to as the slayer of snakes and is often shown stepping upon and grasping crocodiles, snakes, and scorpions. We have a letter from an 8-year-old pharaoh who let me just redo this. Thou hast said in this thy letter that thou hast brought a dwarf of divine dances from the land of spirits, like the dwarf whom the treasurer of the god Baradad brought from Punt in the time of King Isi. And thou must bring with thee this dwarf alive, sound, and well, from the land of the spirits, from the dance of the god, to rejoice and gladden the heart of the king of Upper and Lower Egypt. When he sleeps at night, appoint trustworthy people who shall sleep beside him in the tent, inspect 10 times a night, for my majesty desires to see this dwarf more than the products of Sinai and Punt. You can tell from that letter that not only were they just like prized possessions to these people, but they were also kind of mystical and magical, and they really did think that they had some connection to gods. I think it's so crazy to think that there was little people gods like at the beginning. Like, I would have been worshipped. Back then, I would have literally been like given a prize burial ceremony when I passed away. I'd be showered with people just thinking that I was like 10 times better than I already am, you know, just because I was short. Now I can't even get a text back. I just really think that I would have thrived back then. I probably would have been a player though. That's probably why I wasn't born back then. let's move on. Seneb was one of the most powerful men in ancient Egypt, and he had dwarfism, and he had an average height wife and I believe 3 average height children, definitely 2. He was one of the most influential, powerful people at the time. I feel like we would have been friends. A rich little person? Love that. In some points in history, little people are only used for specific purposes, like a court dwarf to entertain or a midwife. But in ancient Egypt, people with dwarfism were allowed to be jewelers. They were beekeepers. They were dancers, performers. There was a wide variety of roles that a little person could have, which is starkly different than what you'll come to find. I'm being really serious when I say this, but I have beef with Aristotle. In ancient Greece, they were, first of all, not nice. They were sick in the head back then. I have nothing against, I would love to go to Greece. Nothing against, I actually have not seen the movie My Big Fat Greek Wedding. Not that, anyways. Aristotle in particular, okay, he had a, let me get the name of this right. Sorry, just because when I go to the afterlife, when I finally pass, one of the first people I'm gonna go talk to is Aristotle, because he had specific beef first with little people that I need to squash. But he wrote a book called De Partibus Animalium. He says basically, he's like, little people have bad tempers, they sleep a lot, they're top heavy because their heads are so big and it causes them to be like basically insufferable. For what? I feel like he got rejected by a little person and he just has like this vendetta, because who in their right mind writes a book and then writes that? like, I guess some people, you know, some authors write The Giving Tree and some write Departum Antebellum, whatever the heck that was called. But yeah, I don't really know of any accounts of little people in ancient Greece. Usually in history, you'll see when it comes to people with dwarfs. Sorry, I forget that the camera's here and I'm like, but you don't see a lot of accounts from actual little people themselves. You'd rather see accounts of little people through the eyes of average height people. And it really depends on how that society viewed little people at the time that will dictate how little people are described. Because some societies, even just like Aristotle being like, oh, they have fat heads and like they're top heavy, and it like, use your brain, Aristotle. It's just so interesting that we have so little about little people at this time, but we do have this very bold beef from Aristotle dictating his views on little people. It's just very, what's the word? Sick and twisted. Let's talk about little people in ancient China. There was a little person in specific who was an actor and a performer. His name was Yu Zan, a court dwarf in the court of the first emperor, Qin. He was just a great guy, okay? Little people in general, I do think are better than average people, just in the fact that, like, name three horrible little people. Right. Name three horrible average people. You get my point? So Yu Zan was a perfect example of this, because even though he was being forced to perform as a court dwarf, one day he saw that it was raining outside and everyone was warm in the court indoors, but the guards were stuck in the rain outside. And Yu Zan was like, goes outside and he's like, yo, you guys should come in. And they're like, we can't. So Yu Zan, on behalf of the guards, stands up to the emperor to request that, you know, he's like, we're all in here chilling. And they're outside, you know, freezing in the cold, wet rain. And because of him, the emperor actually gave the guards some, like, relief by sending in guards to swap places with them so that the other ones could get some rest. In ancient China, they really loved to have sex with little people. Like, they really did. There was a lot of sex slavery going on. Okay. Lots of people were going around just buying little people to be their sex slaves. There's actually an account of a group of average height people standing up to an emperor who owned a plethora of slaves with dwarfism, and they pleaded him to free those slaves and see them as equals and not as, you know, inferior just because of their dwarfism. And he actually connected with their plea and freed those slaves. Do you know who didn't free their slaves though? We're moving on to Italy in the 1400s. There was a woman named Isabel who was the Marchioness of Mantua. She was obsessed with little people. Would I tell you that in history, I would consider her to be one of the people who is the most psychotically obsessed with little people? She would literally build them entire miniature apartments that were scaled to their size just because she was obsessed with, like, giggling at the thought of them being, like, short, walking through a short house, which, I mean, they probably were living their lives. Like, that was the first time there was, like, accessibility, more so than there is now. She had one of the biggest buildings known built for little people to live in, and she was just obsessed with having them. One of her most famous little people that she owned was named Crazy Catherine, and she was known for being a drunk, and also her party trick was being able to make herself, and I quote, wet on command for the laughter of the people requesting it. What? Sometimes I read these stories of people throughout history who had court dwarves, who some of them, they took it to the next level, like Isabel, and there's definitely, like, I've met Isabels before, where they just have this weird fascination with little people, and I don't blame them necessarily at first, but I think that at a certain point when you meet someone with dwarfism, if it's for the first time, sure, there's a quote-unquote adjustment period where you might be like, I'm talking to an adult who is my age but half my size. That is an adjustment period for some people. Do I get it? No. But do I understand that? Yes. But after a certain point, we are people. I pay taxes. I, you know, have a social life, I have a sex life, I drive, you know. So if you are only seeing us as these, like, childlike, magical, like, ooh, wow, things after a certain point, then I am going to be like, Babe, you're one step away from owning a little person. Isabel would even go as far as breeding little people, and she would give them away as gifts. She would write to her friends and be like, hey, I have a new little person who's almost walking, and once that she is, she's yours. She was like ripping away all these kids from their parents and sending them off to live with some random freak in the countryside who wanted a court dwarf. That's just so weird to me. Like, hello? In one report, it said that she sent a dwarf to her brother who was ill. Just like, you know, a care package with a little person. And her brother writes back and he's like, oh my God, I'm literally so much better now. That dwarf was better than the house you bought me. Like, she literally bought him a whole palace as a gift. And he said that the dwarf was better. Why are you so obsessed with me? Now, it wasn't just in Italy in the 1400s where court dwarfs were being collected in the masses. All throughout the world, for the next few hundred years, actually, people were going out and scouring the globe. Literally, there was jobs in courts. Imagine, you get hired, it's your first day on the job as little person collector. It's giving Rumpelstiltskin. It's giving the Pied Piper. It's giving Krampus. It's giving abducted and sold into slavery. The people who were in my comments too, every time I talk about court dwarfs, and I'm like, they were enslaved. They were like, everyone was enslaved. Cool. Lovely. I appreciate that contribution. Court dwarfs were really popular for so long, and it's so fascinating because it's like for so long, people, they would rather own little people than integrate them into society. They would rather build them miniature apartments to view at them and gawk at them with their rich friends than actually contribute to architecture that's accessible in general. Like, again, Isabel had one of the largest properties at the time, and it was just because she wanted to have all of these miniature apartments built for little people. The only reason I want to marry rich is so I can buy some of these places that little people are like, were historically abused at. Like, I want to buy the home of P.T. Barnum and then light it on fire. For those of you who are listening to this podcast, this is a picture of, it's a very famous photograph, actually. It's a painting of Nanno Morgante, who was one of the most famous court dwarfs, whose name was actually Braccio di Bartolo. His name, Nanno Morgante, was given to him as kind of like a dehumanizing prank, because there was a poem written by an author named Luigi Pulci, and in the poem there was a giant named Nanno, so they thought it was funny to give the little person the giant's name. But this was a court dwarf in the court of Cosimo Medici, and it was one of the most beloved court dwarfs within this court. There's actually some statues that are in Florence, the Boboli Garden and the Bargello Museum, both again in Florence, Italy, where there's marble statues beautifully displayed of, well, they're not necessarily flattering statues, because again, it's always like these average white people depicting little people in kind of an ableist way. Like, they're like, oh, there's these, like, they literally would call us, like, silly freaks. Anyways, I'm getting sidetracked. If this gets to Florence, Italy, though, please go visit one of those two places and send me a picture, please, of you with Nanno. So now in the 1800s, we are looking at freak shows. Everyone knows what freak shows are, but if you're unfamiliar, it's just basically a period in time when people would buy tickets like you were to go see the Barbie movie. But instead of Margot Robbie, it's a child with dwarfism who was bought by a snake oil salesman to do tricks. And that little person was called a midget to make it less human. Because it wasn't exciting being like, oh, it's a short person, but it was exciting to say, it's a midget, it's a midgy, you know? Midget is a derivative of the word midge, which stands for a small insect. P.T. Barnum is one of the most famous people during this era who exploited people who had dwarfism. He would go out and he would find kids, including Tom Thumb, who was 4 years old, when P.T. Barnum told his average white parents, hey, I'll pay you and adopt your kid. And then, he took this child out and started selling tickets. And then he found another little person years later, and he had her. Her name was Lavinia Warren, and she married Tom Thumb, and it was $1 million ticketed event. Like, there was over $1 million in ticket sales, because people were that obsessed with this kind of phenomenon. Even Tiffany & Co. sent a silver-encrusted carriage and horses to the wedding, and Abraham Lincoln had them over. I know the Queen had them. They were, like, popular, but in a very negative way. Definitely Tom Thumb, I think, he benefited the most, I think, financially as well. It does seem like he was compensated well and lived a pretty luxurious life. Whereas there were some other little people that P.T. Barnum also, quote unquote, managed, like Commodore Nutt, whose name was George Washington. That's what was also sick. It's like all these people throughout time buying these little people and then changing their names. So it's like they have no identity. It's really sad. But Commodore Nutt was another little person during the same time that he would parade around and have show up for appearances and dress up and have photographs taken. And these freak shows were, little people were just one component of an overall, like, I mean, at one point they described there being a freak show where you just walk through all these exhibits. And one of the exhibits, there was someone literally unaliving themselves. And that was less attended than seeing Tom Thumb just stand there. Like, they had worked up such this image of, like, look at these strange creatures that they were crowding around a little person just standing there while someone was... I wanted to play a clip of a video I made on TikTok.
This is one of the reasons why I don't use the M word when referencing little people. This is Emily M Words, and she was born in 1877 during the age of freak shows, and she had a type of dwarfism known as primordial dwarfism. When she was 7 years old, she was married to a 20-year-old little person that you see pictured here on the right. Back then, if you were a little person, you were lucky to survive because society basically neglected disabled people, and the only use they had for them was exploiting them in human zoos and freak shows like this. They used words like the M-word and other dehumanizing, demeaning slurs to refer to human beings instead of just calling them human beings. So personally, I do not use that word. I know a lot of people don't know all of this type of information, and they usually just think it's like, oh, you get offended by the word. It's not that. It's just that knowing what it was used to justify, I feel strongly we should just use the proper words.
Around this time, we also have Benjamin Lay, who was a radical abolitionist Quaker who had dwarfism and dedicated his entire life to fighting for people to realize that slavery was not okay and that particularly fellow Quakers should not be enslaving people. He went as far as living in a cave because he was like, I ain't living next to slave owners. He was known for dramatically protesting slavery. So he would literally kidnap slave owners' children. He wouldn't do anything to them. He would just invite them over while their parents were distracted. He would give them tea and cookies. Their parents would freak out and be like, our kid's missing. And then he would return the child and be like, this is literally what you do every single day when you rip apart children from their families. Episode number one of Dwarfism History was dedicated to Benjamin Lay's story. So if you want to know more about his incredible story, I highly suggest you check out that episode. Now we're going to be talking about the Ovitz family, who survived experimentation during World War II. For the sake of not being banned on YouTube and TikTok, etc., I can't use specific words surrounding people involved with this, but you know who I'm talking about. So the person behind World War II had an obsession already with little people. There have been images found of drawings that he did of Disney's Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. I believe it's Dopey and Grumpy or Doc that they found images that, again, the man behind World War II drew himself. Meanwhile, there's a Hungarian Jewish family of little people, and they're touring Europe performing. bringing joy and light and laughter to people. And then World War II starts, and eventually they find themselves in the camps. And right before they are to be executed, one of, again, I can't mention the name, but one of the most evil doctors in history was like, no, 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 we want them. We want this family, because at the time it was really rare for there to be an entire family of little people. And again, there were some apatrite siblings, but they had the record at the time as being like the largest family with dwarfism. The youngest was only 15 months when they entered the camps. And for, I believe, almost a year, they were really tortured to the brink of their lives. They were just forced to be subject to all of these kind of pointless examinations and tests. I mean, they were even paraded on stage nude in front of all the soldiers at the camp, and poked and prodded with sticks as the doctor was kind of like saying all of the things that were wrong with little people and how, you know, future generations were going to have different, like, it's just really like psychologically, I cannot even imagine standing naked on a stage with all the people who are literally killing people like you and people that you love. I really like can't think about this story without getting so. The last survivor, Perla, one of the daughters, passed in 2001. Warwick Davis, who is best known for playing Willow, all of his work in Star Wars, The Leprechaun, he's just an icon, and he is the highest grossing supporting actor in history. He did a fantastic documentary some years ago about this story, about the Ovitz family. I highly suggest you check it out. It's on like the lowest of quality on YouTube, but you can watch the full thing. Just look up Warwick Davis, Seven Little People, and you'll see it. It will pop up. I just can't say the name. So now as we get closer to present day, we have a couple people that I wanted to point out who have contributed, I think, to history in a positive way. So we first of all have Billy Barty, who is probably, if I'm not wrong, the first person with dwarfism on screen. He worked with some of the greatest legends in Hollywood and later went on to found the Little People of America, which actually was ironically called Midgets of America, I believe, at first. And then in the 50s, he was like, oh, that's just a slur. There's no... Well, some people think that midget is like a form of dwarfism, like a proportional form of dwarfism. It's not. Midget, there's no such thing as a midget. Again, it's an insect, is a midge. And a midget is just a slur. There's many different types of dwarfism, but they all are called something specific. Like mine's called diastrophic dysplasia. It's not called midget dysplasia. So Billy Barty, it started off Midgets of America, and it started off just like a few little people. He changed it to Little People of America after, you know, years of growing it, and now it has thousands of members, thousands of thousands. And there's conferences that happen where thousands of little people will come together from around the world. There's local chapters in different cities, and it's my hope that when I release Dear Average People, the film I'm working on, that we'll be able to screen it in different cities and invite people to come. Like, I'll be able to rent out a private, like a theater or a screening room, and be able to invite people like you to come and watch it, and then have like Q&As after with little people in each like city. And so you guys can kind of meet little people in your area who are already forming community and already working to be seen and heard. And you guys can kind of meet those people in your area, because there's chapters everywhere. Some cities have more little people, like LA has, California has a lot of little people. New York has a lot of little people. There's little people everywhere though. Billy Barty fought so much for the fair treatment and respect of little people. Actors, non-actors, just in general. I think he really was the figurehead. He was the Peter Dinklage of his time, with how, like, his impact, you know? He really changed the game in terms of perception, publicly and on screen, of dwarfism, and we have a lot to thank for him. And the Little People of America, I mean, it is a resource center for many people who might have a child with dwarfism, but they don't know anything about dwarfism because they're average height people, and they need kind of a place and a community to go. That's what LPA is supposed to be for. We also have Sammy Bryan, who was a gospel singer who toured with Aretha Franklin. I'll play a little bit of her singing, because she just truly had such a gorgeous voice.
Yeah.
as someone who has grown up being a fan of Aretha Franklin and singing Respect from the earliest memories that I have, I just really love knowing that one of Aretha's friends, one of her coworkers, someone she, you know, really came up with, had dwarfism. We also have Judy Lynn Del Rey, who is responsible for acquiring Star Wars, the book series, before the films had actually come out. So because of her, we actually have the novels Star Wars. I mentioned Warwick Davis earlier, but I wanted to bring him up because I also think he's a really important part of dwarfism history for what he's accomplished throughout his career. He started in the industry at a very young age. He was an Ewok at 13 in Star Wars, and inspired just through his personality under a fursuit alone, he inspired the director of Star Wars, George Lucas, to create a whole film, Willow, for him, which he was only 17 when they filmed, which is insane. Action adventure movies are incredibly hard to film, and then being 17 on top of that, he pulled it off. Hi, Junie baby. And the same goes for Peter Dinklage, too. I mean, yes, he was an elf playing the angry little person, but he's also the first person with dwarfism to win, I believe, all of the awards he's won, which is an incredible accomplishment. It's sad knowing that there's so many little people who could be also winning awards in Hollywood, but just are not given the opportunities. But Peter Dinklage being such a prominent figurehead and respected actor is important to note, I think. We also have Jen Arnold, who you might recognize from a TLC reality show called The Little Couple. She is one of the world's most accomplished medical professionals. I actually got a comment the other day, a comment from somebody saying that when they were a child, they actually had to go to the hospital and their doctor was Jen, and she doesn't remember much about the exchange, but that Jen had given her a doll to comfort her, and I thought that was so sweet. So it's 2023. What does dwarfism look like now? We've come a long way. We don't own little people. Court dwarfs aren't a thing, but we... Be positive. Right now, I feel like we're going backwards with dwarfism. We're taking little people out of projects that are known for having little people in it. I personally still experience an obscene amount of harassment from strangers every single day, every single time I go outside. It's really scary when people are following me around filming you and have like no regard for your reaction. Like, you could be crying your eyes out, you could be yelling at them, you could be like asking them nicely to stop, and they don't care. They'll just do it anyways. That's scary. People following you around in your car while you're driving because they notice that you're a little person driving and they want to follow you to film you. That happens all the time to me. People coming up and picking you up. That happens to me a lot. And I don't mean picking up like, hey, baby, what's going on? I mean like literally coming up behind you and hauling you off the ground. So we still have a long way to go. I'm hoping that when I release my movie and it's just jam-packed, filled with every single type of little person that you could ever... I'm just kidding. I hope that my film indicates why dwarfism history is relevant to now, because how people have treated other people in the past, whether they be 3 feet tall or 10 feet tall, is going to indicate, you know, how they're going to treat people of all kinds. So I think it's really important to note things so that we don't repeat. Because who knows? We went from ancient Egypt to now, so I could imagine there could be a world where, what if average people are the ones that are freaks? Kidding. In the upcoming episodes of this podcast, we're going to do deep dives into a lot of these stories and some new ones. So if you want to stay up to date, make sure you subscribe on YouTube, hit that bell notification. And if you're watching or listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, make sure you follow so you get the latest episode as soon as it comes out. As always, dwarfismhistory.com will have resources available for today's episode. Basically, it's works cited for articles, academic journals, and stuff that I found around these topics. Thank you so much for supporting this podcast as you've gotten to the very end. Let me know what you thought of today's episode by leaving a review. I love reading them. Now I'm going to answer a question from Instagram that I got. Someone asked, What is the timeline for Dear Average Height People? Dear Average Height People is a documentary comedy special that I've been working on for the past 2 years. And in the last year, we've started fundraising to make the movie. And as of today, we've raised over $24,000. And we are so close to hitting our fundraising goal of $35,000. And once we do, we'll be able to start hiring the additional crew that we'll need and cast members and filming again. And I estimate it will be about a 6-month period from start to finish. So I'm hoping that if we meet our fundraising goal by the end of this year, we'll be able to have the film out next spring, next summer. Fingers crossed. Thank you guys for letting me be a part of your day and for listening to this podcast. I really appreciate you being here. I don't really have anything else to say except I love you. Keep going. Thank you.